many of the prophecies talk about Jesus being the king, and somehow we have just categorically dismissed those prophecies. Behold, your king is coming to you. He is just and having salvation, lowly and riding on a donkey, a colt, the foal of a donkey.
You just heard a portion of the upcoming message titled, Our Humble King, by Pastor Abadan Shah of Clearview Church in Henderson, North Carolina. At Clearview, our focus is on making Christ visible, from the way we worship, to the way we serve, to the way we love one another. Come check us out at 3485 Oxford Road in Henderson, or visit us online at clearviewbc.org. Now join us for the rest of this week's message.
So this morning, we're going to be in that series on Christ being our King. The series is called Royal. Now, as I mentioned to you in our previous two messages, it is hard for us to appreciate the regal language the Bible ascribes to Jesus, because we didn't grow up under a king or in a kingdom. We grew up in a democracy or a republic where we elect our officials. So it's very hard for us to understand what it's like to live under a king. And sometimes people think, oh, I see, you know, the British royalty. Or, well, that is more of a constitutional monarchy. The British royalty is not the typical kings and kingdoms throughout history. Because a constitutional monarch, like the Queen of England, is more like a symbol. She's a symbol of unity. She's a symbol of stability in the British Empire. She's a symbol of pride of the British people. But the real power to make and to pass legislation is really with the elected parliament. So honestly, we do not have a good example of what it means to live under a king or a kingdom. So if we keep that in mind, we realize that much of the Bible is about God being our king. And Jesus Christ is our king. He came as a king. He lived and died as a king. He rose again, the glorious king, and he is coming again. So it's very important for us to keep those things in mind. This morning, we're going to talk about our humble king. We talked about our creator king. Jesus created everything. It was made for him, by him, through him. And then we talked about our good king compared to his own lineage, King David. Jesus was the good king. He never hurt anybody. He never took advantage of anybody like David did with Bathsheba, had her husband killed. Jesus is the good king. Today we're going to talk about our humble king. And I want to read for us from Zechariah chapter 9, verses 9 through 11, and the verses will be on the screen as well. Zechariah is prophesying. He's talking to the people of Judah, the people of Israel. They're back from exile, and they're trying to live their normal life, but life is not normal. They've been in the land for 20 years, and God has been telling them to rebuild the temple, but the neighbors around them are trying to harass them, trying to get them out of the land. And so this prophecy is to encourage the people not to give up, not to give in, and trust the eternal king who is coming for them, who will rescue them, who will save his people. So listen to Zechariah 9:9. Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout, O daughter of Jerusalem. Behold, your king is coming to you. Did you notice that? Many of the prophecies talk about Jesus being the king, and somehow we have just categorically dismissed those prophecies. Behold, your king is coming to you. He is just and having salvation, lowly and riding on a donkey, a colt, the foal of a donkey. And then he says in verse 10, the king is speaking now, this king who came riding on a donkey. I know immediately your mind is going to Palm Sunday when Jesus rode into Jerusalem riding on a donkey. So this is about Christ. I will cut off the chariot from Ephraim and the horse from Jerusalem. The battle bow shall be cut off. He shall speak peace to the nations. His dominion shall be from sea to sea, and from the river to the ends of the earth. As for you also, because of the blood of your covenant, I will set your prisoners free from the waterless pit. Now, what exactly is Zechariah talking about in this passage? Several things he's telling us, and we're looking at this passage as Christ being our humble king. He's telling us about the humility of this king. The first thing he tells us is that humility is not weakness. This king is humble, but he is not weak. Have you heard the old, it's become a cliche, meekness is not weakness. And it is true. Humility is not weakness. To understand that, we have to back up to verse 1 of Zechariah chapter 9. It's not on the screen, but I want you to just listen to the words. The burden of the Lord, of the word of the Lord against the land of Hadrach. Now, if you look at this map on the screen, Hadrach was somewhere to the north next to the Orontes River. That's today, you would say it is somewhere in the north of Damascus, Syria. You know, you've heard on the news about Aleppo, you know, the ISIS forces are fighting in Aleppo. So Hadrach, this city, was south of Aleppo, north of Damascus. God is talking to these people because they're harassing his people. They're harassing the people of Judah. They're trying to build a coalition to come against them. And Damascus, now we know what Damascus, where Damascus is. This is the capital of Syria even to this day. And Damascus was also against God's people. Has been for a long time. Listen to verse 1. The burden of the word of the Lord against the land of Hadrach, against Damascus, its resting place, for the eyes of men and all the tribes of Israel are on the Lord. Now here's a prophecy that is coming. Verse 2. Also against Hamath, which borders on it. This is a city in Syria, north of Lebanon. So this is Lebanon right here, okay? And this place called Hamath was somewhere to the north over here. I mean, all that's left of the ancient cities but ruins, and I'll talk about that in just a minute. And then against Tyre and Sidon. Tyre is still in Lebanon today. I don't have it on the map, but it's there. And Sidon, they were kind of like twin cities, about 30 miles from each other, even today in modern-day Lebanon. Listen to what God says to these cities of the north, right up here, who are trying to harass God's people down here. Listen, to Tyre, though they are very wise, for Tyre built herself a tower, heaped up silver like the dust. Can you imagine that? Like sweeping the floor and all the dust and dirt and if you have cats and dogs, all the hairballs, you know, you're sweeping all of them up in a dustpan. That's how rich Tyre used to be. That gold and silver and riches were just like dirt. What else? And gold like the mire of the streets. Behold, the Lord will cast her out. He will destroy her power in the sea, and she will be devoured by fire. When did this happen? This was a prophecy given by Zechariah in about 520 BC. Okay? This prophecy was fulfilled by a man you know very well, Alexander the Great. You heard of Alexander the Great, right? He was a Macedonian. Ruler of the Greeks. He went against Persia. He conquered Persia. He went to the ends of the earth, so to speak, all the way to India. When he came up against Tyre, listen, he fulfilled this prophecy. He tore Tyre down. 150 years later, from the time of Zechariah. So, before we talk about this king lowly and riding on a donkey coming in, wait. You got to read verse 1, because this king is not weak. He's very powerful. And when you go against his people, he stands up and he fights for them. But not just that. Listen to verse 4. Behold, the Lord will cast her out. He will destroy her power in the sea, and she will be devoured by fire. Verse 5. Ashkelon shall see it and fear. Gaza, you heard of Gaza on the news, I'm sure. Gaza also shall be very sorrowful, and Ekron, for he dried up her expectation. Now, let's go to the next map over here. What are these cities? These are four of the five Philistine cities in Israel. I mean, there it is. Gaza, Ashkelon, Ashdod. These were famous. Ekron, right up there. These were famous Philistine cities. And what were they doing? Just like the cities in the north that were against God's people, the cities from the south were also against God's people. And what is God telling them? He said, your day is coming. You're harassing my people. You're going against my purpose. I will deal with you. And guess who did it? Who fulfilled this prophecy? Again, the same man, Alexander the Great. He came and he destroyed these cities. In fact, when he came up against Gaza, guess what he did? He dragged King Battus of Gaza behind a chariot through the city while he was still living. I mean, he dragged him to the city until he died. You say, why are you telling us this? Listen to verse 5. The king shall perish from Gaza, and Ashkelon shall not be inhabited. So before we talk about the king, humble, meek and mild, riding on a donkey, coming in with a olive branch of peace, don't forget that Jesus is also a powerful king. And his enemies cannot stand against him. We know he is the creator king. We know he is the good king. But he's also a very powerful king. What else do we know here? Verse 6. A mixed race shall settle in Ashdod, and I will cut off the pride of the Philistines. Did you know that the Philistines are no more? That group of people don't exist anymore. Why? Because they kept going against God's people and God's purposes. Now, what is the point of all of this? What I'm trying to say to you here is, when we read the history of the world, we think that it's just the strong conquering the weak, or the wise overpowering the foolish. What we don't realize is that there is a mysterious hand behind all of this, and that is the hand of Jesus Christ. His purpose is still moving, has been throughout history. Don't think of history as just the survival of the fittest. It is fulfilling. Alexander the Great was in many ways fulfilling the prophecies given 150 years ago. King Jesus has always been in charge, and he still is. Listen to what Daniel says in Daniel chapter 2, verse 20 and 21. He says, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. Now listen to this. And he changes the times and the seasons. He removes kings and raises up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. Jesus is in charge of history. So when you hear about political powers rising up, falling, don't just think that, oh, you know, there are people behind the scenes who are pulling the strings. Ultimately, behind all the screens, it is Jesus Christ, the ruler of history. And God's purpose will always be done. Humility is not weakness. It is power under control. The question for us today is, how do you see Jesus? Do you see him just as a baby in a manger? Do you see him just as a helpless son of God nailed to the cross? Look at what they did to Jesus. Do you see him as the one standing outside the door, knocking, waiting to get in? Now don't get me wrong. The baby in the manger, yes, helpless. The son of God on the cross, yes, giving his life for us. Standing on the door waiting for us to let him in. But don't forget He is also the one who is in charge of everything. He is a powerful king. Humility is not weakness. When people act like that, you know, oh, I'm so sorry, I'm just a humble person, or, you know, oh, forgive me for living kind of humility. That's not humility. Humility, as Nicole's dad would say, is power under control. Jesus is ultimately, immensely, infinitely powerful. But here's the second point. Our time is running away. Humility is not weakness. We got to get that straight. But humility is not cruel either. Humility is merciful. Listen to what happens in verse 7. Okay? Zechariah 9:7. This is an odd passage. Listen to what the Messiah says. This coming king says, I will take away the blood from his mouth and the abominations from between his teeth. Now, I know this is an odd passage. Like, what in the world is Zechariah talking about? I mean, is he, you know, smoking something? I mean, is he crazy? What happened? What is he talking about? Listen, blood from his mouth is referring to pagan sacrifices that involve drinking blood and junk like that. Abominations from between his teeth is referring to eating forbidden fruit or food, animals or dead animals or, you know, rotting animals. There are a lot of practices, pagan practices that were going on. What Zechariah is saying here and what Jesus the King is saying here is, even in the midst of judging the cities in the north and the kingdoms in the south who were coming against God's people, and even in the midst of showing that he is in charge and his purpose will be done, even in the midst of that, God was changing the hearts of individuals. You see, he will take away the blood from his mouth is another way of saying that this people will give up their pagan practices and come to the living true God. Isn't that amazing? That even in the midst of God's judgment, there is mercy. Even as God is judging peoples, he is still saving individuals. I mean, think about your own family. I mean, I guarantee you, most of us, we would say our families as a total group, many of them are lost. And yet you see individuals in your family who are saved, who are walking with God. I mean, how did that happen? It's the grace of God. It is so beautiful to see God is administering justice and judgment against sin and still showing grace to those who are willing to receive it. Listen to verse 7. But he who remains, even he shall be for our God. So as God is judging the cities in the north and Tyre and Sidon and Ashkelon and Gaza and all these cities, even in the midst of that, there are some who remain. Now folks, if I were God, all right, I would destroy everything. I wouldn't save anything. But God is God. Even in his judgment, there is mercy. Listen to this. But he who remains, even he shall be for our God, and shall be like a leader in Judah, and Ekron like a Jebusite. Now, what exactly does God mean? Jebusites were people that God, David spared, and later on they became part of the people of God. Hey, listen. I was not part of God's chosen people, but through Jesus Christ, I have been grafted into the vine. Isn't that beautiful? Even though we were not directly part of the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, but by receiving Christ, we have become part of the family of God. You see, humility we know is not weakness. We see how God destroyed these cities. But at the same time, don't think that God is unmerciful. God is merciful. And God does care. Let me give you a quick example of this while we go to the last point. You remember in the book of Acts, chapter 8, when Philip was told to go and talk to someone who was reading a scroll. Remember that? Do you remember where exactly this was? I'll remind you. Acts chapter 8, 26, and an angel of the Lord spoke to Philip, saying, "Arise and go toward the south along the road which goes down from Jerusalem to Gaza." You know, in some ways, this is a fulfillment of that prophecy. And what did Philip do? He led this Ethiopian man to Christ, explained the gospel to him, baptized him, and after he was baptized, what happened? Philip is taken away, but in verse 40, Philip was found at Azotus. Can you put that second map up there, Nicholas? He was found at Azotus. Where is Azotus? Azotus is the Roman name for Ashdod. You know, the Bible is so deep. When I hear someone say, so-and-so knows the Bible cover to cover, I don't know if anybody knows the Bible cover to cover. I've been studying this book for 25 years, and I don't think I've gone even an inch deep in a mile-deep book. I mean, it is so rich. So what are we saying here? Even in God's judgment, there is mercy. Humility is mercy. You want to know a person who is truly humble? It's a person who is not weak. Neither is that person harsh. I know that we have a lot of definitions. Humility is knowing who you are. Humility is knowing your weaknesses. Humility is not projecting yourself. But ultimately, if you want to know humility, look to Jesus. Listen to that verse we began reading this message with, Zechariah 9:9. "Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout, O daughter of Jerusalem." Why? "Behold, your king is coming to you." Don't forget, this king is powerful, but he's also merciful. But he is a king who is coming. And how is he coming? He's coming with righteousness. It's a promise that God had made through Isaiah chapter 11. "There shall come forth a rod from the stem of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of its roots. Righteousness shall be the belt of his loins." So this is a king who is righteous. Humility is also righteousness. If a person lies and cheats and deceives, they're not humble. They may pretend to be humble. That's not humility. Jesus was righteous. What else did he do? He brought salvation, bringing salvation. 1 Peter 3:18 says, "For Christ also suffered for sins, the just for the unjust, that he might bring us to God." Humility does not see people destroyed, but brings them to God. You say, wait a minute, didn't God destroy people? Didn't Jesus Christ, pre-incarnate, destroy peoples? Yes, there were people who were rejecting his plan of salvation. There were people who were going against the coming of the plan of salvation. It's a very different thing. But here's the third word. He is lowly. Lowly. You know, the word that is used there for lowly is the same word that is used to describe Moses. Moses was known as a humble man. As people went against him, bickered and fussed and fought against him, he was lowly. He didn't become prideful. And then it says, riding on a donkey, a colt, the foal of a donkey. Now, it is a fulfillment of a prophecy that Jacob, keep in mind, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. Jacob gave that prophecy as he was blessing his 12 sons. And he says about Judah, what did he say? "The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh comes, and to him shall be the obedience of the people, binding his donkey to the vine, and his donkey's colt to the choice vine. He washed his garments in vine and his clothes in the blood of grapes." There's so much there about the blood of Christ and all of that, but I just want to focus on binding the donkey to the vine. Why is that important? You see, a horse was an animal of war. You say, kings back then rode on horses. Some kings did ride on donkeys. When they were coming with a message of peace, they rode on donkeys. So it was not unusual. But if you want to come into a city and tell them, you better listen. Then you will come on a horse, not a donkey. Jesus came in peace. He didn't come to declare war. He came to bring peace. And in the process, listen to what else he said. Verse 10, I will cut off the chariot from Ephraim and the horsemen from Jerusalem. I mean, these were two cities that were fighting against each other. Jesus came to bring peace. You know, humility is peace. That's not humble. The battle bow shall be cut off. He shall speak peace to the nations. His dominion shall be from sea to sea and from the river to the ends of the earth. As for you also, because of the blood of your covenant, I will set your prisoners free from the waterless pit. So much there. What it's saying here is that Christ came to bring peace. Christ came to bring reconciliation, not just between us and God, but also between us and each other. And one day, he's coming again, and he will rule from Jerusalem every nation on the earth. The question today is that humble king, not weak king, but humble king, not merciless king, but merciful king, is he ruling your heart? He said, I think so. Well, here's the question. If he's ruling your heart should be at peace with God and peace with other people. If he's ruling your heart should be full of righteousness, not evil. If he is ruling your heart, your desire should be to bring peace in this world. Your desire should be to share the gospel to the ends of the earth. I need to reflect Christ. Would you bow your heads in prayer? In the quietness of your heart, the Holy Spirit is speaking to you. Question is, are you truly humble? You claim to know Christ. Are you like Christ? Do you reflect Christ? Are you peace-loving like Christ? Do you desire to see people get saved like Christ? And if you don't, today, confess your sins to God. Make things right with people in your life. And if there's sin in your heart, if you're going against the purposes of God, His will prevail. And the only thing you and I can do is ask Him to forgive us, cleanse us, and then refill us with His life, with His Spirit.
Thank you so much for joining us for this message. Jesus didn't come to present Himself as a conquering king or to draw attention to Himself, but rather in humility, He came to serve and ultimately to give His life for us. He's our example of humility, and just like Jesus, we should look to the needs of others before our own. For more information, visit us online at clearviewbc.org, and for this sermon's notes, check out Pastor Shaw's blog at abadanshaw.com.